Exodus 1, please. Exodus 1. And we're going to begin reading in verse 1. Exodus 1, verse 1. We'll read the entire chapter. Now these are the names of the children of Israel which came into Egypt. Every man and his household came with Jacob: Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, and Benjamin, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, and Asher. And all the souls that came out of the loins of Jacob were 70 souls, for Joseph was in Egypt already. And Joseph died, and all his brethren, and all that generation. And the children of Israel were fruitful, and increased abundantly, and multiplied, and waxed exceeding mighty, and the land was filled with them. Now there arose up a new king over Egypt, which knew not Joseph. And he said unto his people, Behold, the people of the children of Israel are more and mightier than we. Come on, let us deal wisely with them, lest they multiply, and let it come to pass that when there falleth out any war, they join also unto our enemies and fight against us, and so get them up out of the land. Therefore they did set over them taskmasters to afflict them with their burdens. And they built for Pharaoh treasure cities, Pithom and Ramses. But the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied and grew. And they were grieved because of the children of Israel. And the Egyptians made the children of Israel to serve with rigor. And they made their lives bitter with hard bondage, in mortar and in brick, and in all manner of service in the field. All their service wherein they made them serve was with rigor. And the king of Egypt spake to the Hebrew midwives, of which the name of the one was Shiprah, and the other, name of the other was Puah. And he said, When ye do the office of a midwife to the Hebrew women, and see them upon the stools, if it be a son, then ye shall kill him. But if it be a daughter, then she shall live. But the midwives feared God, and did not as the king of Egypt commanded them, but saved the men children alive. The king of Egypt called for the midwives and said unto them, Why have ye done this thing and have saved the men children alive? And the midwives said unto Pharaoh, Because the Hebrew women are not as the Egyptian women, for they are lively and are delivered ere the midwives come in unto them. Therefore God dealt well with the midwives, and the people multiplied and waxed very mighty. It came to pass, because the midwives feared God, that he made them houses. And Pharaoh charged all his people, saying, Every son that is born ye shall cast into the river, and every daughter ye shall save alive. Father, bless our reading and our study. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Exodus is one of those books that we know is an important book. But if we were just choosing a book that we were going to read and study for our own personal edification, we might not find that Exodus was very high on the list of choosing for us New Testament Christians. I mean, after all, it was written over 3,500 years ago, and it deals with Israel, an ancient nation, leaving another ancient nation, Egypt. And I'm sure that most people would consider the book of Exodus not very relevant for their lives in 2015. However, I think the truth is, after we study this book, I think you'll see that it is more relevant than we've ever imagined. And I hope to demonstrate that even in the lesson tonight. Exodus represents a great change from Genesis. Between the end of Genesis 50 and the beginning of Exodus 1, there is a period of time of 300 years that passes. So please understand that some significant changes have taken place both in Egypt and in Israel. Notice two such changes. Number one, the covenant of God between himself and Israel is becoming very evident. Go back to verses 6 and 7, if you will. Joseph died and all his brethren and all that generation. 70 of them went in, and they're dead. But I want you to notice verse 7. And the children of Israel were fruitful and increased abundantly and multiplied and waxed exceeding mighty, and the land was filled with them. I don't know about you. I get the impression that they were pretty multiplied. They had multiplied to a great degree. And I want you to remember that that's the promise of God. When God made a covenant with Abraham that was then confirmed in Isaac and then confirmed in Jacob, it involved three things. Number one, God told Abraham and his progeny that their seed would be like the sand. You just couldn't possibly number the grains. In other words, it was going to be a great and large number in the nation. But it also involved blessing. And God told them that if somebody blesses you, I'm going to bless them for blessing you. And they were going to be a blessed people on this earth. The third important part of that covenant was there was going to be land. They were going to have a home place. And please understand this. From the first books of the Bible until the day that you and I live in, that has been the single most contested promise that God has ever made. Because God gave what we would call the Holy Land, what our modern world would call Palestine, God said that belongs to Israel. And the world says, we don't want Israel to have it. When they had come into the land, they were 70 strong. They had been living in this borrowed land for 300 years. And they had prospered and grown, and they had been blessed, but they still do not have their own land. Even today, as Israel talks about their land, I believe it has been a topic for since the beginning of Israel to desire and talk about and look forward to their land. I would have you notice something at the end of verse 10. When Pharaoh is saying, boy, we better be careful because they're expanding, they're growing, and if there's a war, what's our fear? If there's a war, what's our fear? Look at the last phrase, and so get them up out of the land. Pharaoh's fear was not that they would possess Egypt, it's that they would leave. Oh, now make no mistake about it. He knew that if they allied themselves with other enemies, they would certainly do damage to Egypt. But understand, Pharaoh wants Israel in Egypt because where Israel is, there is blessing. And because he is using them to build his own kingdom. And so Pharaoh's fear is they will leave us and we want them to stay here. We'll see a lot of that when we go through the plagues. God is preparing them for the exodus to their own land. We get the word exodus not from the Hebrew. It's actually a Greek word given to us by the Greek translators of the Old Testament. And the closest word that we could have in the Hebrew would be a departing. But exodus means literally to exit a place. And so the very title of the book describes the topic of the book, and it is all about the departing of Israel from Egypt. A second thing that had changed was that a new king of Egypt has put the Israelites in bondage. Look again at verse 8. Now there arose up a new king over Egypt, which knew not Joseph. I don't know this, but I read this. And most historians believe that the king, the Pharaoh, was probably Thutmose III. Do you feel blessed to know that? Thutmose, Thutmose III. And he had begun a new dynasty. The Bible tells us that he is a king that did not know Joseph. Now be very careful. Make no mistake. It was not that he did not know the name Joseph. It wasn't that he had never heard of Joseph. What are you talking about? It was that he did not feel any connection with Moses. He felt like Moses was a bygone era. He felt like Moses was something that happened, Joseph was something that happened in the past, but Joseph wasn't relevant for today. And so he knew the story of Joseph. All of Egypt knew the story of Joseph. All of Egypt knew that they were where they were because of men like Joseph. But he did not feel connected. He didn't know him in the sense of a biblical accepting into his life the truth and the concept, if you will, of Joseph. I love the word. The word for did not know or no association is the word yada, the Hebrew word yada. And if you'd have said, hey, Pharaoh Tutmos, what do you think of Joseph? Yada, 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 yada. No big deal. No connection. No association. That's good stuff right there, isn't it? So to this young king, Joseph was just a piece of fiction. You say, well, preacher, I just have trouble grasping that. Hey, listen, I think you're living in a nation today that is losing touch with its history of less than 300 years ago. I think if you went to most people today, I'm reading more and more and more that we're thinking of changing memorial names. We want the Jefferson out of there. After all, you know, his past. And George Washington, I don't think we ought to call it the Washington Memorial. And I'm just saying, it's not that we will ever forget that there was a George Washington or there was a Thomas Jefferson or there was some notable man in history. We just don't feel it's relevant for our day. And we think that everything has to be new and we have to move on without those things because those are of the past. And I think that's what it says when Joseph did not know Pharaoh. It means that he felt no connection. As a result of the lack of connection, problems began to develop for the Israelites. Over the 300 years, threats had developed with Egypt's neighbors. One of the things that you and I need to remember is that the Bible does not occur in a vacuum. In other words, yes, they're living in Israel, but it's not some ethereal world where this people called Israel live inside a land called Egypt. The world is progressing. The world is growing. The world is moving on. And there are nations all around Egypt that are moving and growing and want to possess what they possess and want the land that they have. And so the world is moving on. And Pharaoh is becoming concerned because now internally there is a growing problem. There is a growing situation that may actually be stronger than the old situation. Does that sound relevant to you today? I don't want to sound bigoted tonight, but we have uncontrolled immigration in our country. And so I just want you to understand that the problems we're wrestling with today, this is what Pharaoh's wrestling with back there. There is a people living in his land that is growing stronger than his native people. Now, we can argue native, we can argue all that. All I'm trying to say is that people say there's no relevance between the Old Testament and our day. It is our day. They were facing exactly the things that you and I are facing in our world. So Pharaoh was concerned that millions of Israelites would ally with the neighbors and overthrow him. So Pharaoh institutes a three-pronged plan to handle the situation. Number one, he decides he's going to discourage those Israelites. Look at verse 11. Therefore, they did set over them taskmasters to afflict them with their burdens, and they built for Pharaoh treasure cities, Pithom and Ramses. So he decides, well, you know what? We better take a hold of this situation. Let's discourage them. The Egyptians enslaved the Israelites for the purpose of building at least these two cities. I think they probably built much, much more. The cities of Pithom and Ramses were called treasury cities. They were storehouses. Now, it could be that immediately upon arrival in Egypt, one of the things that Joseph's family did was assist him in storing and making places and distributing the grain and all those things. And maybe they gained a reputation not only for shepherding, but maybe they gained a reputation for building and for warehousing and all of those things. But whatever the reason was, Pharaoh decides they are going to begin to build Pithom and Ramses. They've unearthed one obelisk that has a picture of a taskmaster at a place that they believe was the city of Pithom. And in a hieroglyphic, it is a man with a whip. And the Egyptian hieroglyphic says, "Work without fainting." And they believe it is the exact spot where the taskmasters ruled the Israelites. However, according to verse 12, the more they tried to discourage them, the more they multiplied and the more they grew. One of these days, Satan is going to learn a lesson that persecution does not end God's people. As a matter of fact, it serves to spur God's people on. And so they were grieved over the fact that the Israelites were growing in number. No matter what they did, the demographics were not looking good. And so they tried to enslave them. They tried to weary them. They tried to discourage them by making them enslaved to build these buildings, but they continued to grow. And so phase two of the plan comes in. They decide they're going to deceive the Israelites. Look at verse 15. Verse 15, the king of Egypt spake to the Hebrew midwives, of which the name of the one was Shipra, the name of the other Puah. And he said, "When ye do the office of a midwife to the Hebrew women and see them upon the stools, if it be a son, you'll kill him. But if it be a daughter, she shall live." The Egyptians have it figured out. They have got to stop the population growth by any means. And so they order the two top midwives. And by the way, I do not believe that Shipra and Puah were the only Hebrew midwives, but I do think they were in charge of Hebrew midwives. And so Shipra and Puah are brought in, and they're told, this is the law of the land. When you see, when you and your cohorts get to a place where this Israelite woman is ready to be to give birth on the stool, they, I guess, delivered sitting up, then your job is, if it's a girl, you let her live. If it's a boy, you snuff out that life. It's interesting to note that the names of the two leaders of the Israelite women, Shipra and Puah, their names mean beauty and splendor. I love that. Just something beautiful and splendorific about the birth of a child. I think verse 16 is the first reference to partial birth abortion. You say, well, the book of Exodus is not relevant to our time, really? Really? Because here's the instruction to these two ladies. When you get there, when that baby is being born, and you see what it is, if it's a boy, you break its neck. Right then, right there, before it ever, before a mother ever can get attached to it, before it ever has any worth, before it ever can become part of the family, you just break its neck right there. If it's a boy, you break the neck. If it's a girl, she can live. You say, preacher, are you kind of going crazy on this? No. No, you see, the devil has worked in the field of abortion long before 2015. No one would really know. Just a sad moment. Just something, those boys are never born alive. I love what we learn about the midwives in verse 17. Look at it. But the midwives feared God and did not as the king of Egypt commanded them. They feared God more than they feared Pharaoh. And those midwives understood when it was right to say no to civil authority. And when you are being told that it is your responsibility to abort the birth of a little baby boy, that's time to say no. Here's the truth. You and I sit here tonight because brave men and women of God have known when it was right to say no to civil authority. Men like Wycliffe and Tyndall and Luther who said no. People like these midwives. Soon they were going to deliver a little Israelite boy, a little Hebrew boy, and they were going to name him Moshe, Moses. Third, Pharaoh's had enough and he's going to take it upon himself to destroy the Israelites. Look at verse 22. And Pharaoh charged all his people, saying, every son that is born ye shall cast into the river, and every daughter ye shall save alive. You want to talk about a horrible time on planet Earth? He tried to discourage them. He tried to enslave them and to weary them. He then tried to deceive them and tried to enlist the help of the midwives, just break their necks. When none of that worked, he decided out and out, I will simply have to destroy them. And he didn't order the Israelites to destroy their own children. He ordered his people. He charged his people, when you see a little Hebrew boy, you throw him in the river. We need to understand that the chief god of Egypt was the god of the Nile. Pharaoh's playing a little bit of a game here. He wants the children killed, so in his command, he's suggesting that it's up to the god of the Nile what child lives and what child doesn't live. And of course, we understand what lives in the Nile. We understand that either the child dies and becomes food for the crocodile, or before the child ever does drown, the crocodiles take the child. Child sacrifice was already practiced in Egypt. There were temples built along the Nile where literally babies were thrown in and, of course, devoured by the crocodiles. And you and I must understand that this does happen. Please, I'm not going to sanitize this for our 2015 American minds. Please understand that Hebrew baby boys that escape the midwives or the process of partial birth abortion in their birth are hunted down by Egyptians who are more than ready to sacrifice them to the god of the Niles and more than ready to appease their Pharaoh. And I don't know whether it is hundreds or thousands, but there are baby Hebrew boys thrown into the Nile. It was a horrible time. And it was a horrible time where Israel is finally going to lift up their cry to God and say, deliver us! Never doubt that the tactic of abortion is a tool of the devil, not only to control a specific population, but to attack the people of God and God Himself. I want you to listen to the words of Margaret Sanger, who was the founder of Planned Parenthood. Of course, I know that none of this is relevant for our day, but listen to the words of Margaret Sanger. Would you put them up there? Abortion appeals to the advanced radical because it is calculated to undermine the authority of the Christian church. I look forward to seeing humanity free someday from the tyranny of Christianity. A quote from Margaret Sanger, who is idolized in the liberal feminist mind. What was her goal when she established Planned Parenthood? Oh, to help mothers in poverty have a choice. Please understand that her goal was a hatred of God. She was motivated by a hatred of God. And if it cost the lives of millions of little innocent children to be free of what she called the bondage of Christianity, then so be it. She was willing for those children to pay the price. When you hear in your news today that your tax dollars pay for Planned Parenthood. Will you please remember this quote? Because we are being forced to pay to try to destroy the very thing for which we give our lives, our faith. Abortion, even homosexuality, eventually euthanasia. You say, euthanasia, they're never just going to kill old people. Really? They're selling body parts now. Boy, if there was ever a generation that needed to shake it off and wake up, it is us. All those times you thought the preacher was nuts, it's here. It has nothing to do with compassion or freedom of choice. It has to do with an intense hatred of God that can be read in the very pages of the first chapter of Exodus. Though suffering is seemingly unfair, it's at times necessary. Satan desires to destroy the line of Jesus Christ. He started after the garden. He has always wanted to destroy the line of Jesus Christ. And this example that we have read of in Exodus is no more or less the plan of Satan than when Herod decrees to kill the babies in the time of Jesus. And it is no different than Satan's desire to control and manage people today in what we call abortion. While Satan is trying to destroy the Israelites, God has another plan. And through all of this horribleness, God is doing something. God is working. Sometimes we lose sight of that, and I'm going to be honest with you, sometimes it's tough to struggle with. It's tough for me to get a hold of this, but God is allowing this. Because God has a plan, and God is moving through history, and God is working, and God is dealing with His people. We may not see God working, but at all times He is. He is working. And these Israelites are going to cry out to Him and wonder where He is and wonder why He's not intervening and wonder why He's not working. I don't know about you, but sometimes in my morning prayer, I look up to God and I say, "How can you let this happen to our nation? Where are you? Have you not seen? Do you not hear?" And the answer always comes back, "Yes, I've seen. Yes, I hear. And yes, I'm working. And I'm moving this to my desired end." And all of this is transpiring because God is readying His people to do what Pharaoh said he didn't want them to do. He's readying them to get up and go out of the land. You know what? I know the book's not relevant for us, but you know what God's doing today? He's readying His people to get up and go out of the land. May God help us to see.